Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Tuesday morning, and I'll tell you, it's very nice. So everybody here in this room is in a bad mood, so that's good. And then, but no, we're all happy. Good morning. Welcome to the program. Very nice to have you with us. We would love your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. And we enjoy hearing from you. We'll get to those in just a moment. Let me introduce the group at hand here, and we will get started. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm ready to rock and roll.
Excellent.
And I'm delighted to hear that the panel is also ready.
Yes.
Likewise.
Oh, they started about 12 minutes ago, so they're good. They're ready.
Right.
They're all revved.
As long as Rosemary's in the room, I guarantee you things will keep heating up.
I don't know why you say that, Alan. I have no idea why you say that. So I this weekend, my oldest son came to visit. And he took me to a shooting range. So I said to my mother, Mom, we're going to be back soon. We're going out shooting. And she gasps and clutches her chest and goes, oh, my God, not at each other. It was not at each other. But Cisco is an avid gun owner and believes that every liberal should shoot, because if you are going to oppose guns, you need to do it with knowledge.
I agree
with
that.
And, actually, many of my Second Amendment people on the other side of the question always say that you don't know anything about guns, you don't know what you're talking about, and that is a point. So I went with him, and it was actually pretty mind blowing.
But didn't you find
AR-15s we shot?
But didn't
with
you
5.56 cartridges?
But didn't you find that it only enforces your concern by how difficult it is to do that? A random 17, 18-year-old should not be doing that.
I think my son put it better than I could when he said, you go here and you see that people, it's fun. It is, I admit it. It requires skill and knowledge of a very, dangerous weapon. At one point, a shell jammed in the gun, and we had to call somebody over. And it was amazing watching.
So, like pressing the button at the bowling alley.
Yeah. It was amazing watching. So these people actually know the stuff. There's a whole language to it. Don't police the brass. I love that expression, which means don't go trying to pick up this dead cartridges. You'll die if you do. All of this, but these are the people who should most care about making sure these weapons do not get into the hands of people who are inappropriate. As he said, the difficulty is deciding who that is. But I don't have as much difficulty as he does. If you're under 21, forget about it.
Right.
AR-15s. ARs of any sort should not be in the hands of AR type weapons should not be in the hands of anybody who's too young.
I've had many good days in my life, and I've had very, very bad days. And there's days where I've missed opportunities, and I think seeing you with an AR-15 is missing key opportunity.
There is a video that I may let it see of day.
I think I have to catch that. Welcome. Rosemary Armeo is here, investigative journalist and UAlbany adjunct professor. Thank you. No, it's
RPI.
RPI,
yes.
Thank you very much. Mike Spain is in the house. He's a former Times Union associate editor. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning. And my daughter is visiting with her family from Portland, Oregon. And we went nowhere near a shooting range, I can assure you.
Wow. Dejong. Mark Whitman is here, investment banker on Wall Street. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. I've never shot an AR anything, but I do shoot clays with shotguns. And I do think it's important for people who are nervous about gun regulations to know people who own and use guns.
Yeah.
I honestly think, and I'm taking this in part from Steve Levitt, who, by the way, was a classmate of mine and is the other half of Freakonomics. He says that
he's fascinating.
Yeah, he is.
He's really smart.
He was, not that you aren't. No, but he was really that smart back in high school too. It's not surprising where he is, but he makes the point that for those who've never been near a gun, the mystique around them and the potential danger is probably somewhat exaggerated. And if you know gun owners or use them yourself, it's not to say that you'll line up on one side of the spectrum or the other, but perhaps some of your irrational fears are ameliorated.
Yeah, because I was new at it, it's like learning to drive a car. Everything you have to think through, change the safety, put your hand here, get your finger off the trigger, you're not ready, point, look for the red dot. And, you know, my son and the other people there, just it was one movement. And it requires a lot. For me, it would be a lot of practice. And it's expensive, you know, to get the training. He paid for it. I would
well,
do
the
that
training
routinely.
And the ammunition and the,
oh,
and,
yeah,
the
everything
and the time
was,
on the
and the weapon itself.
The weapon itself. I went the place that you went to, they have another store in the region. I went to that store just to see what it was like. And I was actually really surprised. It wasn't what I expected because it's a beautiful store.
It's very cool.
They know their.
I love the people.
They know
I really
their.
Did.
They know they their stuff. And I was asking, you know, wait. So what are people buying? You know, what mm-hmm. what sells and why, and most of the things were what you would expect. You know, and I don't know. It was. I think it's important for us sometimes. I'm not saying everybody should do it, but I am saying that if you are interested in it, it's worth going in. I think you'd be you'll learn a lot from the experience.
You do, and one of my other sisters now is calling me my terrorist sister, but because she's so anti-gun. But you go in there and
she's right.
Yes, Alan.
Not because
good
of the
point.
Guns, Alan. It's because of my tongue. But there was a woman clerk there, not much bigger than I was, and she owns a. I've forgotten the name and caliber, but a big hunting rifle.
Yeah.
She does not hunt. She says, no, that's not in my DNA to kill animals. She target shoots. And it's fun. I totally get it now. Before, you know, before that, I wouldn't. I have shot handguns before in a target range, but never the big. The AR-15 was a whole different experience.
And yet, come on now, folks. People are being killed all over this country. There are too many guns, and we all know it. You know, this paying to gun ownership here is a little bit much as far as I'm concerned. I think we should be going in the other direction. And write your letters, folks. I don't care.
Well, I mean, I don't think finding out information about what is out there and understanding what people are doing is bad. I also don't think, you know, one of the things that I came away with is how much, 'cause the day I was there, I would say easily 80% of the people were veterans. And these are people who have spent years and years and years of training.
Yeah. In the history of American gun, you know, the relationship that Americans have to guns, it was post-Civil War, you know, that the NRA kind of got its start. You know, veterans had used them and they wanted to use them peacefully and they wanted to be able to own them. And then it sort of grew in the 20th century. But it's understandable. I don't object to people gaining literacy about it. And you are an investigative reporter,
right,
Rosemary. Do you recommend that everybody go to a gun range and fire an AR-15?
No, but I think people like us who are very outspoken, like Alan, very outspoken against ownership, should do it. You need to know. When our critics say, you don't know what you're talking about, they're right. They're right. The language I didn't get, the calibers, all of that, the weaponry. And it is important to know that if for nothing else, and I can argue against it more strenuously, I have not changed my mind about having guns in the home or owning it myself. But I get it. I get why people want to have these weapons and use them.
Alan, the inconsistency there between getting it and being adverse to having one in your home, Rosemary?
Well, because I wouldn't have total control over it in my home the way I did in that range. I felt safe in that shooting range. You're behind a barrier. You've got earphones on. Nobody's around you. There's somebody there right away. But, you know, one of my sons has a gun. He says it's all safe in a lockbox. But my granddaughter's there. She's 9 years old, like one of those kids killed in Uvalde. I still have too much emotion around it.
And you don't see a day where somebody left a gun where it shouldn't have been. And that creates hell.
I don't have to imagine this. It happens every day in America. Do you remember the case in Texas where a woman had a gun in her pocketbook and she put her pocketbook in the shopping cart along with her son, turns around to pick up a Tide or something, and he pulls out the gun and shoots her? Yeah, it happens every day in America. I am opposed to gun ownership.
Yeah, Alan, if I may. Of course you may. I enjoy shooting clays at the range. I did it with some frequency a while ago and became pretty good. My wife said, well, if you own your own weapon, it'll be sized to you and you'll be better.
Right.
And frankly, if you look at the statistics, the main use of firearms in terms of deaths in this country, as we've talked about, two-thirds of them are suicides.
Right.
And I said to my wife, I'm fine using the wrong size, keeping it there at the range. And I have no history of mental health and my problems in my family that I'm aware of. But you know what? I just think that's a better decision.
Well, you know, and that's...
I used to work with a guy named Glenn Doty. He's passed now. And he ran a gun. He was the editor of the Legislative Gazette and a professor at New Paltz. One day he said to me, well, you know, a guy like you, you're opinionated, you should have a gun in your house. And I went home and I told Roselle, I said, Roselle, I got to get a gun. I've already paid for it, for the house. And she said, well, you ought to get another wife, too.
I just got an invitation from a friend to go skeet and trap shooting with rifles. And I said, yes, I will try it.
Yeah. I don't like having I wouldn't want a gun in my house.
No.
But I wouldn't feel comfortable with that. But you know, I don't feel real comfortable having yogurt in the house either. So I don't know.
Now that's great, Joe. So yogurt
ice cream is probably more dangerous.
Here.
Yeah.
And by the way, I love that there are shotguns for me to use at the clay shooting range. I have never been on the 4 train in Manhattan on a 95 degree day during rush hour when everyone's about to push each other and said, you know, the one thing missing from this is concealed handguns. That would make the situation a lot better.
Well, and to your point, which I think is, by the way, this is not what I was planning on starting.
I'm sorry. I always yell at Alan, but we're not talking about
did
walking in the dark.
The topic.
I did
or
hijack.
Or Fire Island.
Yeah.
Was it? Oh, it. To your point, I think that the people that I know in my life who go shooting regularly do the same thing, and they're very comfortable having their weapons kept in a locker away from them. They go in, they pay, they go to the range, there's someone there to oversee it, and that is, you know, and that's a safe practice. That's different than, of course, people going out hunting as well. It's an interesting, I think it's an interesting, it's very cultural, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's right. It is cultural.
I think we need some definition here, Joe, because I'm not following. When you say it's very cultural, you mean that some people within the culture use guns and others don't?
Well, they're separate cultural threads. People whose father taught them to hunt will hunt more likely than someone who never was taught to hunt. You know, that kind of thing. I think it's...
There's the sportsman practice.
Yeah.
There is the gun collector. There is the veteran that I mentioned that wants to go out and spend... maybe 4, 8, 12 years of their life competing with medals with other veterans to be the best shooter and to keep up that skill.
I don't know, Joe. Every day we see these incredible numbers of accidents and shootings and children who got a hold of a gun. I have grave problems with what you're saying.
Well, I mean, if it's in a locker at someplace else, I don't, you know. Well, we'll have to take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to the panel discussion this morning. Alan Chartak, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo, and Mark Whitman. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Let us go to letters on this subject. This one, subject line, gun porn. I am sorry, Rosemary's enjoyment of her AR-15 experience is not inspiring to me. There are way too many guns in the world, way too many AR-15s. Maybe fantasies are more healthy than reality in this case. Don't forget, mental illness doesn't confine itself to non-gun owners.
Can I repeat again the moral of my experience, which is... you can enjoy them, you can understand why people enjoy them, but these are the very people who should be most vocal about keeping them out of the hands of people who should not have guns. A friend also tells me that, you know, if you go to a rod and gun club and you want to shoot there, you must join to be a member, the NRA. So she says, in effect, the very group promoting gun safety is forcing you to become a member of the group that promotes gun violence or allows gun violence to flourish.
I don't think that's all rotten gun clubs, but yes.
Many here
yes,
do.
Many, yes, many, yes.
I would just like to respond to the letter by saying one word, amen.
Callan says, I've never respected Rosemary more. Thank you for being open enough to broaden your horizons and bring a more nuanced perspective to the table. Plus, by purchasing ammunition to use at the range, you're helping to fund state conservation efforts through the Pippin-Robertson Act. Did you know you were doing that?
Amen.
Copycat.
Copycat, right.
What the F has happened to you people? Are you on drugs today regarding the gun love? That from... I'm not sure who that's from.
Jesus. See, I mean, it's really hard to have. You can see how hard it is to talk to the other side.
I think that the last letter was interesting. Everything is nuanced.
Yeah.
And there's always more. It's more complicated than simply yes or no. And that's the truth. And maybe that's what I get from this conversation. Yeah. But it hasn't changed my personal opinions.
No,
more aligned with Alan.
I mean, I get it. It isn't gun love, though. It's an attempt at gun understanding.
Jonathan says, absolutely no reason for any civilian to have possession of a semiotic weapon outside a shooting range. I don't think anyone in this room would disagree with that.
Nope.
Okay. Incessant rounds of gunfire from shooting ranges violates ambiance of neighborhoods and nature for miles around. Which is, I think, why in most cases you see the ranges in the middle of nowhere. Although I will say there is a municipality within 40 miles of here where the gun shooting range is next to the
Don't say elementary school.
No,
please.
It's worse. It's a sport field for soccer, lacrosse. And basketball, it's where the kids go and the sport teams play. And you're sitting there in one of the soccer fields, and all you hear are the guns. Now, I don't know how it's all contained within that, but it makes me very uneasy.
Yeah,
it just seems. And by the way, how did you get the permit for that? Like, how did that happen?
They may have been grandfathered in.
Exactly.
It's like
first?
The landfill next to the school in Rensselaer.
Oh,
yeah,
my
that goes right together. That's compatible.
My
use.
Goodness. Kind of like a hose. Let's put the plant right in the middle of the town, right next to where those people live. I enjoy hearing about Rosemary's experience with the proper use of firearms and agree with her as to who and should not be able to possess a firearm. Prior certification and training are essential elements of responsible gun ownership. I consider myself a liberal, but own both rifles and pistols for target shooting and home/personal defense. Common sense dictates that there should be limits on magazine capacities and a ban on assault weapons.
You know, this personal defense thing is so interesting. I'd love to know the stats on how many people who keep guns in order to protect themselves and their families ever have to use them in that context.
It's minuscule. But just a fun fact, the odds that any one given gun is involved in a homicide or death is, on average, a gun will kill someone once every 10,000 years. So you think about the odds of any one gun being involved in even a shooting that's justified, it's minuscule.
Like more guns per person per capita in the United States, that number shifts dramatically, doesn't it, though?
No, that is the number in the United States. A given gun...
No. Given how many guns there are, many of those will end up being used and end up being fired and result in the death of people. I mean, it's happening. We know it.
I don't know about the rest of you, but if the statistic that I am familiar with, which is on average, not that every one of us owns three guns, but on average, every individual...
There are three guns for every person.
That's right. Yeah. Thanks, Joe. That's very helpful. Yeah, that's right.
Well, I thought it was
very scary.
Yeah, it's 400 million guns. Maybe that's per adult. There's 400 million guns, and we're, what, 340 million people are sort of the rough numbers. Mm-hmm. Alan and listeners, the one thing I would suggest, if you want to get a better handle on odds of what happens with a gun, if you go to 538.com, they have a graphic that breaks down homicides, gun homicides in the U.S. every year, and it's quite sobering. But it does suggest that...
Don't keep us in suspense.
I've said before, two-thirds of the deaths, so the biggest chunk you would solve for, if you just said, okay, we're going to magically make all the guns disappear, and the 40,000-some deaths each year that take place in the U.S. because of firearms are all going to go away, two-thirds of the deaths that would no longer happen are the suicides. Mm. Right? And those basically, by the way, Alan, are males between my age and roughly your age.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Well, there you go. And then another third get involved in homicides. The homicides obviously skew younger in terms of, and it's a lot of male-on-male violence in that group. And when you get to accidents and police-related shootings in the other, it actually gets to be a pretty small percentage. Not to say that it's not far, far too many, but if you look at the real problem, and as I've said before, the irony, right, of arguing with the Charleston Hestons of the world that you need to take his gun out of his cold, dead hand is that actually two-thirds of the time is the most likely reason you're going to take the gun out of someone's hand after a homicide is if they've done themselves in with it.
That's
so
very clever.
I don't know.
Very cleverly put, wasn't it?
Yes.
It may be clever, but it's not nice.
The reality is not nice.
The reality is indeed not nice, yeah. And there are too many guns. And anybody who doesn't think that this country has too many guns should go back to the crystal ball.
I don't get the crystal ball reference.
The crystal ball is just whatever it is that gives you intelligence.
I don't think I'm speaking for everybody. I don't think anyone is saying, no. I don't think we believe. We get a couple letters like this. Nobody needs an AR-15, writes Dorothy. Nobody, and I'm not sorry for saying this, Rosemary. I don't think.
No, I don't need it, and I don't want a whole lot of people to have it, but I understand why some few can go to a range, can go to a safe place, and use it for sport. They're responsible and safe, and that's it.
I think Joe, I didn't get your position on this. Can you?
I didn't have a position. I was asking. I was asking Rosemary.
But behind every question is a position. So what's the position?
I honestly don't have a position. I guess my only position was that I was just saying I don't think anyone here is advocating that everyone should have a gun or access to an AR-15.
What I've always said is whenever liberals say ban all assault rifles, you get a response saying, you know, nothing about guns. If you ban assault rifles, they'll turn them into hand pistols, you know, and they'll be illegal and they'll do the same thing, blah, blah, blah. And my point is, okay, you guys who know the guns so well, you come up with the definition. You tell us what guns no one could have, how you phrase it so that no one can get around it. Surely there's a way to do it. Instead, they just talk about how stupid we are and how no law should be made at all, and we get nowhere.
Well, I've been listening to you carefully, as I hope I always do, Rosemary, but I'm not sure I understand what your position is on the surfeit, the number of guns that we have in this country.
Way too many.
Okay.
I think I'll say it again. The moral of my story was who owns guns should be much more severely regulated and restricted.
Okay.
I do not need to go to war to know that I oppose war. I do not need to shoot a gun to know that I oppose guns. Rosemary, that means if we follow that logic, if one does not have a vagina, then one should not be voting on matters that involve a vagina.
Let me see. Can you read that again? No, there's a negative in there. Do I want to? You should not be voting on that. I mean, I spent a long time saying I wasn't going to talk to anybody who did not have or could have a vagina, like trans people. But I've modified that because obviously abortion is an issue that has involved men and women and trans people. And we all should be talking about it. It's the same way, like, are you not going to talk about race? Some black friends on Facebook do not want to hear from white people when they are discussing matters of race. But you will never solve the racial issue in this country if you're not talking to both races. So, I would like people who don't have vaginas to spend a little time understanding the issues for those of us who do.
And Rosemary, not only can we speak to people of both races, we can speak to people of all races.
All races, exactly, yeah. I mean, specifically on Facebook, it was black friends.
Keith writes, Alan is correct. We have a problem in this country with guns. People dress up as ammosexuals and go to Walmart with their guns. Someone was shot and killed yesterday at a Subway sandwich shop because there was too much mayo on their sandwich. The fact is that
horrible.
There's three times more likely to die from a gun if you have a gun in your house.
Absolutely.
You're less safe when you own a gun. The NRA have fooled you. Alan is correct.
Well, go ahead, Joe. It sounds like something good was coming up.
No, I just don't. I don't think that
I didn't argue this.
Yeah, I don't think fooled in the sense that I don't want a gun in my house.
Okay, you know, I do know about the Second Amendment, you know. And it was never interpreted the way it is now until around the 1970s. Before then, it was seen in the context, as it's written in the Second Amendment, of a militia. The idea of individual gun ownership is new. It's a result of massive lobbying by the NRA and by lots of distorted thinking.
Okay, then there's this letter who says, Rosemary said it herself, that you're uneducated on guns. An AR-15 is no more powerful or quick-firing than probably 100 other weapons. It just has a scary back-looking stock. There are guns from the 1800s that fire just as quick, just don't look as scary. Guns don't jump out of people's closets and kill people. The government has failed our community with mental issues. That is the problem. Parenting is the problem. Guns don't jump out of closets on their own. I will not pretend to know the specifics of what is more powerful than an AR-15, but when you look at what is available for an AR-15 and the magazines that you can put in, the amount of bullets that you can pump out in a very short period of time, regardless of how it looks, that's still scary.
In the sports shooting, you know, we were carefully lining up the little red dot in the sight with the target, but watch the video. It's horrifying, of the guy in Buffalo who is the racist who went into the supermarket. He gets out of the car with the gun ready, and he just fires. He's not aiming. He's not looking at red dots.
No,
he is just
spraying.
Firing. Yeah. It is so much like a video game. So am I going to blame video games? That's totally what he was imitating. And I think the worst, he shoots two people before he's even out of the car. He shoots through the store window and kills three more people or wounds them badly. He goes into the store and then shoots them in the head later, horrifying, and then comes to a guy who's cowering, going, no, don't. And he goes, oh, sorry, sir, because that guy was white. It's horrifying.
Yeah.
So what you're saying is correct. But what I'm saying is, too, I did not realize how terrifying that was until I held that weapon in my hand and realized an 18-year-old did that to children. His target were children. I'm sorry. I'm not apologizing for the experience. It does not make me a gun lover. It did not change my mind about the ludicrousy of an absolute Second Amendment. But it does give me new understanding of letters like that.
And yet you hear virtually every day a story of some guy who is backing into a parking spot and somebody dive bombs on him. And he pulls out a gun and kills him. Now, admittedly, it was quite a while ago that I read that story, but really, it shows you what the availability of a weapon can mean.
Mm-hmm.
Go to just two more letters and we'll take a quick break here. This is from Joe. In Northampton, the range is across the street from an elementary school in a very dense neighborhood. It's scary and disruptive. Yeah, I don't know how those things happen, but I'm not sure. Alan is
guns don't kill, zoning boards do.
Right. I mean, we're gonna put in a shooting range. Oh, where are you gonna put it? Right next to the elementary school.
Did I hear my name being invoked?
Yes, Alan is correct. Mark forgets to mention that the guiding statistic for guns should be that any gun in home makes the homeowner and anyone in that household more likely to die by the result of a gun. Guns in the home make you less safe, not more safe.
Do you all remember that Archie Bunker episode where he insists on getting a gun and, of course, it gets stolen and used against him?
I mean, but just for the record, that is exactly the point Mark was making.
I'm sorry, say again?
The point that Mark was making, yes. The listener says, Mark forgets to mention that the guiding statistic for guns should be that any gun in the home makes the homeowner and anyone in that household more likely to die by the result of the gun. And that
Absolutely.
Was Mark's point.
Yeah, good point.
Just for the
even better than
just
Archie.
For the record. How many guns are involved in Chicago, New York City killings of black youngsters? Are they illegal? Are they in the percentage? In the percentages just spoken. And I don't think we were talking about illegal guns. We were talking about legal guns.
Yeah, 538.com. It's a great graphic. I think it's all deaths by all deaths by gun. Thank you.
And finally, before we go to a break, David writes, I am 55 years old and my entire life there has never been a time where me having a gun would have improved the situation. But there have been dozens of times where me having a gun would have made the situation much, much worse. Good point, David. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll move on to what we were going to start to talk about, and we'll do that right after this. Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Very nice to have you with us on this Tuesday morning. I appreciate it. Okay, let's go to it's panel at WAMC.org if you would like to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. So, changing the subject and starting off, agencies phone of lawyer who pushed Trump false elector claims. John Eastman is the lawyer in question here, who lobbied for Mike Pence to declare Donald Trump the winner of the 2020 election. He is fighting now the seizure of his phone. Federal agents last week seized the cell phone of John Eastman. Eastman's lawyer, Charles Burnham, filed papers in federal court in New Mexico on Monday asking a judge to order the cell phone be returned. It was seized pursuant to a search order when he left a restaurant on Wednesday, a day in which federal agents around the country delivered subpoenas, executed search warrants, and interviewed witnesses in a significant expansion of the criminal probe surrounding the January 6th attack. Quick side note, there is a unexpected January 6th hearing that was announced late yesterday that we will air here on WAMC beginning at 1 o'clock. There was a lot of secrecy about that particular hearing, but it is now happening and we know a little bit more about it, which we'll talk about later on. Let me see one more paragraph here and then I'll turn it over to you all. This from the Washington Post. Both Clark and Eastman played crucial roles in Trump's efforts in late 2020 and early 2021 to persuade state legislators in about half a dozen states to replace the electors that Biden had won with electors for Trump. In theory, such a replacement would have kept Trump in the White House. Alan.
Well, look, there's stuff going on here, Joe, that I don't think we know all that there is to know. In other words, when you're calling for extra hearings and when you're saying, we want to put some people in front of a committee, that indicates to me, at least, that there's new information, and that's why we're having this kind of movement. So I do think that there's some potential progress here, depending on what your political position is. But I do think that there's a chance that we're going to see some real progress.
Mike.
Yeah, I don't know, Alan. I think this is moving very, very the Justice Department side of this investigation is moving very, very slowly. And it clearly, the Attorney General Merrick Garland is not trying to look like he's hand in hand with the January 6th committee. You know, they're rushing it through, I think, so that people can have a better idea of you know, what really happened before they go to the polls in November in this very crucial midterm election. But Garland seems to be just doing it on his own pace, very deliberately and, frankly, very slowly. And he'll still be doing it regardless of the outcome of the midterm election. He'll still be the Attorney General on January 1st, 2023. And he'll probably, something will happen then, which will be too late to really have a big impact on the 2022 midterm election. Mm-hmm. But it could have an impact on the 2024 presidential election. Who knows?
Mark Levin.
Well, first of all, it was interesting that Eastman still has a phone that they can capture. I would have assumed if I were him, I would have gone to the Hillary Clinton, Tom Brady school of evidence destruction. The fact that he's...
Oh, whoa. Objection!
I mean, come on. But the fact that he's still got a phone sitting around that they can pick off is peculiar, frankly. Look, I think it's clear Liz Cheney's whole intent in these hearings is her audience is Merrick Garland. You don't lay out a 7-point plan to convince the American public of anything. No offense to anyone in this room or our listeners, but the American public gets lost at about 0.3 in that plan, right? So it's clear that she's playing. And by the way, she's a former lawyer. She laid out her initial comments as a prosecuting attorney. And it seems to me that Merrick Garland has no choice now but to act. And I'm sure that he will, frankly. And you're probably... Some of the seizure that you're seeing is probably related to the action that he's taking. It does make it interesting, though, that they're worrying about a special hearing today because of new evidence. I mean, that seems to be more for the public consumption, because if Merrick Garland hears it 24 hours after they learn it or 2 weeks after they learn it, it would seem to hardly matter. So today's announcement seems peculiar and sort of out of touch with what I would say is the methodical case that's made on behalf of Garland.
Well, unless, of course, they have some stuff. And I suspect they do.
I suspect they do, too. But I don't think you need to. Look, if you blow the horns and say you got a special hearing, yeah, right? If you look back to Watergate, that happened once, and it was the guy who knew about the tapes.
Yeah. Alexander Butterfield.
Right. Okay. Thank you very much.
Oh, we're dating ourselves.
So you better.
Yeah,
so
I
you
remember
better,
that day.
I've been doing that since I was 13. Go ahead. Yeah.
So you better pay off this afternoon, or you shouldn't have bothered doing this out of
secret. Yeah. I John Dean actually said, the famous Watergate, figure, said that whatever it is, it better be good.
Okay, so I disagree with Mark from start to finish, you know, from maligning Hillary, who if she had been president, as she should have been, we would not be in this predicament, to the idea that this is a show for, Tom Brady, I don't care if he maligns
him. You're talking about inflation gate or whatever it was?
Yeah, deflate gate.
Deflate gate.
Yes. But to the idea that this is just a show for Merrick Garland, I think Merrick Garland has been proceeding on this all along at his own pace, starting, as he told us he would, from the bottom, following the track up. And do I think that he looked at what Congress is doing? Yes, and of course it helps him.
He says he has.
And he has been persistently going after people, starting at the bottom, just like he said, and moving up to wherever it leads. And this, I think what it is that Liz Cheney is a Republican, and she has a much better sense of how to present information to the American people than any Democrat. And that's why we're
touché.
Seeing...
Touché.
Well, yeah, but and that's why we're seeing, including the big suspense today. Where are you going to be at 1 o'clock? I know what I'm doing.
But
and,
she is
and that's
not
cause
that
of
kind
her.
Of...
Well, we think we know who it is, though. Isn't
but
it
she's
been
not
reported?
That kind of Republican. Yeah. In other words, there are Republicans who are defending the Trump flag and doing the rest of it. I think Cheney has turned out to be quite a remarkable star in all of this.
After what she said about Roe v. Wade, I can't agree. I think she's doing the right thing in this instance. And she also knows the value of being, she's from Wyoming. So here she is standing up against everybody.
And I standing hope we don't go back into everybody's... things that they have said over the years that may turn out to be
foolish. Said it the other day.
Yeah, well, Alan, I agree. And Rosemary, I think we got to be careful. We need to take allies on this issue where we get them.
Yeah,
and frankly, I think that's the failure to do that is emblematic of the larger issue in politics, which is everybody's afraid to be seen as aligning with somebody else on a piece of incremental legislation.
Right.
right? So I think we need to be really careful. If there's an ally here, you know, unless they otherwise currently belong in jail, I'll take them as an ally.
Yeah,
and frankly,
I agree.
Even if they,
it's coalition building.
That is extremely dangerous, and I don't think you should say it.
Go
ahead.
You don't think that there should be allies who disagree on other topics?
No, I think there should be allies, but I think we ought to be damn careful about who those allies are and whether they have some skeletons in their closet that will deprecate the argument you're trying to make.
I think what I'm arguing against is something different. It's not about alliances, which are temporary, and I don't care who you make them with. If the end point is transactional, analysis should do better. But it's making heroes of people. Liz Cheney is not a hero, although what she's doing in this case is heroic. She's horrible on almost every other policy.
I don't get that. What's the difference between not being a hero and
being
doing something that's heroic?
Because it's limited. We did this with Dr. Fauci, too. We turned him into a god. And he is not. He's flawed. And we did it. We're doing it now with Liz Cheney. She is flawed. Why can't we see people as a whole? Mother Teresa.
Why can't we admire the people? Why can't we admire the people?
You can admire them.
Everything.
That's different than turning them into a hero.
You go, Mike.
Well, I think it's important to admire I think it's important to admire good behavior and outstanding behavior when you see it. But saying, you know, necessarily canonizing everyone who has a good day at the office is not the approach we should take.
Well, good behavior would dictate that we need to take a break. So we will pause. We will do that. And when we return, we'll continue our conversation. Panel at WAMC.org. If you would like to join us, we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. We've been talking about John Eastman and the phone seized by FBI agents. Mike, did we get to you on that?
Oh, yeah. We were talking about how Garland is moving very deliberately, but very slowly.
Garland is a cautious institutionalist.
Boy, he sure is.
Wish you were on the Supreme Court.
Yeah, he'd be a good justice.
He would.
Which, by the way, is why he got chosen, because of that caution.
Yeah. By the way, I think that's something that plagues all of, or too many of Biden's personnel choices, and I think his administration has suffered dearly because of it.
You mean they're not shooting from the hip, with no pun intended. Mm-hmm.
They don't move with alacrity. Mm-hmm. That's been proven.
So, meanwhile, we mentioned the House committee investigating the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. They will hold a surprise hearing today at 1 o'clock. We will air it here on WAMC to present, quote, recently obtained evidence and receive witness testimony. While it was not immediately clear from whom the committee plans to interview, although I think we have cleared
that
now.
Yeah, CNN was reporting, and a few others reported overnight, that it was Cassidy Hutchison, and she's a top aide to Mark Meadows, the chief of staff, and was there on January 6th with Meadows, and had said previously on video interviews that Trump was pleased and glad when the crowd was chanting, "Hang Mike Pence." But maybe hearing it from her directly will have more resonance, or she's going to tell more. But I don't know that that's all that powerful.
So why this secrecy? I mean, that's the thing that has sort of been the question mark about this story. Staff and committee members were asked to go dark and not speak with media. The news was so closely guarded that even some senior committee staff and aides to lawmakers did not know there was going to be a hearing on Tuesday.
Maybe it's Trump.
Now, and the very word surprise is an interesting one.
Yeah, absolutely.
But evidence. Now it says to hear testimony and present new evidence. There is a filmmaker who was with Trump that whole time, and they have subpoenaed his outtakes and all his film. Maybe they got it, and they have a video of Trump doing what Cassidy Hutchison has already said that he's doing. You know,
how would that be an outtake? But I agree with you.
Yes, right. It wouldn't be an outtake.
Mike, I don't know what's going to be debuted, but the one thing I would suggest is the committee has done a reasonably good job of adding a lot of depth to the story sequentially thus far. So I suspect anything we'll hear will be to reinforce a point we've already heard, as opposed to going fast forwarding to the actual January 6th discussion and discussing Trump's inaction, because that's yet to come in the hearings.
The surprise thing is just an artifice to get people interested and involved.
Well, I'm sure
I think that'll backfire.
I'm sure
though.
It's enough. The committee obviously thinks it's enough information about something they've already addressed to warrant retracing their steps a bit. That's my expectation.
For what it's worth, the three staff members on the committee said that the reason for the secrecy is due to credible security threats to a witness.
Mm. Yeah, and that would also make sense if it were Cassidy Hutchison. She's probably had death threats against her. Anybody who stands up to this big lie in such a public way is risking their own personal health and well-being.
Mm-hmm.
The committee has remained in negotiations with potential witnesses to appear publicly while the hearings have been ongoing. Vice Chairwoman Liz Cheney made an appeal to former White House counsel Pat Cipollone after revealing that the committee had evidence that he and, quote, his office tried to do what was right, end quote, tried to stop a number of former President Donald Trump's plans for January 6th. The revised schedule comes days after the committee announced a brief hiatus to assess new evidence and records obtained by the committee, with plans to wait until after the July 4th holiday for any further public hearings. The sudden change suggested an urgency and sensitivity around Tuesday's presentation. So we should know soon.
Well, yeah, but I'm curious. Does anyone think they are risking, if it isn't anything blockbustery, if that's a word, mm-hmm. that they're risking, credibility here? And you know, we're all anxious to hear what
it
is. Yeah, I mean, if it isn't the big, you know, the smoking gun that has yet to be presented, don't you think that just makes people lose interest in what they're doing?
I tend to go with Mark, though, on this, that if you're presenting evidence that bolsters the points that they have and you have more damning evidence to make those points that is time sensitive for whatever reason, I don't know.
Well, I know in a couple hours, won't we?
I understand your point, but I think the people who are in on these hearings that are interested in them are going to be interested no matter what comes out.
Right. And just to reinforce it, Joe, people can hear it on WAMC.
1 o'clock. All right. Anybody else on that? Okay. Let's move on then. We go to this story. Let's talk about abortion rights groups taking up the fight in individual states. The battle over abortion shifted to the states on Monday as a weekend of furious
protests. The democratic
protest.
Process, as John Fassel puts it. Sorry, I had to put that dig in.
Come on.
John Fassel yesterday on the panel.
Yeah.
He former spoke. Congressman.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm jumping ahead of Joe's.
Former congressman, and I have to say, because I get the mail as well as Joe, I have to say I haven't seen mail like that for a long time about people who had concerns about what Fassel had to say.
The battle over abortion shifted to the states on Monday as a weekend of furious protest and prayerful Thanksgiving in the wake of the Supreme Court's Roe v. Wade reversal gave way to coast-to-coast wave of lawsuits, legislation, and pitched political fights. With conservatives in roughly half of the states moving swiftly to end or dramatically restrict reproductive rights and liberals in about 20 more scrambling to preserve them, the national debate suddenly fragmented into a contentious patchwork, with lawyers and lawmakers dissecting state constitutions and statutes after Friday's ruling in Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization. It's all about the states from here on out, said Jesse Hall, a law professor at Case Western Reserve University, who has worked on abortion rights cases. We can fantasize about federal solutions to the issue or nationwide settlements of the abortion question, but I think that after Dobbs, I don't see a lot of possibilities at the federal level. Rosemary.
No, please let me go last so that I can talk without interrupting anybody else.
Okay, Mike.
I yield. No, only kidding. No, it is. I think the professor at Case Western you just quoted is correct. I think that it is going to be a battle in every single state, which and every single state that is already taken action or previously had passed laws that would outlaw abortion should Roe be rescinded. There's a lot of legal haggles over just what that means and when it goes into effect. Even Kristi Noem in South Dakota, who is a strong anti-abortion politician, says, now we got to get together and provide, ways for adoptions to happen and support of women's health, and there's all these discussions, I think, that are just going to go on and on and on. And it'll be really up to the voters, just like Alito said in his decision. People will have to go and vote the politicians out if they don't agree with what they're doing. And in some states, I don't think there's enough people.
Alan.
Yeah, no, I think Mike makes a very good point. People are going to have to make up their minds about who is saying what and whether or not they subscribe to it. But I do think there are an awful lot of people. I mean, I've been looking at polls and things of that kind. An awful lot of people who think that women have the absolute right to make choices. And what this is all about is denying them that.
Mark Whitman.
Well, the one thing we can say is now this is a mess, right? And as is so often the case in America, people who are rich will do much better than people who are poor in these circumstances, obviously, particularly in states where abortion will be limited, if not entirely prohibited. Another interesting wrinkle here is if you look, the exceptionalism of America is that abortions are provided from clinics. Because of the billing complications of putting abortion services inside of hospitals, and some of that I think has to do with federal funding. But abortion clinics have historically been a voice for pregnant people and rights around reproduction. As the clinics shutter in states that are forcing them to do so, that voice will actually be dampened quite significantly. And I don't think people have address that as much. And by the way, this discussion, Mike, you brought up the discussion of abortion. I saw a statistic. I view it with some skepticism, but as a guideline, that out of the women who go on to bear children, who might not have otherwise if abortion had been available, I think less than 15% of those births end up being put up for adoption.
Right, right. And I don't think there is.
No,
I think that's a trope that, I think the, some of the proponents of, to knock out Roe v. Wade said that exactly, you can just put them up for adoption. No, that's not statistically supported.
Yeah, and they know. Coney Barrett who brought that up.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, Mike, I wasn't suggesting
the handmaiden argument.
Well, I'm
underscoring what you're saying.
The longitudinal studies of women who have children people who have children whom otherwise would have been aborted suggest that the economic difficulties that they face are substantial over quite some period of time. And, it hasn't been discussed, but back to Steve Levitt and Freakonomics, right? One of the consequences of that is that economists will tell you that 20 years after you prohibit abortion, it is very likely that you will have a significant rise in crime.
Yep.
In the places where abortion has been prohibited as a result of the difficulties that those individuals face throughout their lives.
In fact, it has been documented that Roe brought about a decline for that
right.
very reason. You have fewer unwanted babies who grow up to be neglected children, abused children, criminals. So, yeah, that's true. The impact of Roe goes way beyond just abortion. As I said before, it put women into the workforce because they could put off child rearing. It brought a decline in health problems for women because there were ways to treat this. It's just the ramifications are great. And the right-wing talking point that we heard so much of yesterday was that this doesn't ban abortion. It just puts the whole debate back into the state legislature with the people where it belongs. And that is crap. Let me say that plainly. This whole thing is rigged. It has been a decades-long effort by the right wing, funded by rich people and special interest groups, first to pack the courts. So you have 6-3 now. And those legislatures, look at how many are controlled by Republicans and how many by Democrats. There's almost enough that you could have a constitutional amendment, never before managed in the United States, where you could have a constitutional amendment against abortion. And you're seeing it already. There are Republican governors and Republican state legislators.
And most of them are men.
Yes.
Most of them are men. And they weaponized.
Ms. Newman in South Dakota puts the beard on that, just like Amy Coney Barrett did. But it's rigged, and the governors know that, and you're seeing bans going into place now in places that where people may not actually want it. So what you're going to see, the democracy here, is going to be at the individual level. And I hope, I want to be part of it, that you're going to see women organizing to first, as the president said, weak tea as it is, we got to get more Democrats in and more pro-choice candidates. I voted today for Kathy Hochul in the primary. I don't like her a lot, but she is decidedly pro-choice, and so I'm going to vote for her. You need to do that. We need to support women with money who can't afford to go someplace else. We need to do a whole lot. And we did it in the 60s and 70s when abortion was illegal, and we can do it again. It's even easier now because you don't have to be a full-fledged doctor in a hospital setting to do an abortion. It is a very simple procedure. I think you're going to see more at-home, safe abortions and use of medical. Yes, I do. I totally believe that. Nurses can do it. You don't need to be a full-fledged doctor. That also was part of the rigged system that, oh, we have to protect the women. You have to be a board-certified doctor with years of experience. No, you don't. And it's not going to end abortion. It's going to just make it go underground. And those of us in blue states, do not listen to the politicians telling you that it's your right is safe here. We are one governor election away from a change in that, or we're facing the possibility after the midterms of a federal ban on abortion that would undo anything at the state level, including constitutional amendments.
Could you, Rosemary, talk about then what the actual choices are that would lead in this election that would lead one way or the other?
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're
asking. In other words, which candidates would lead us away from where you want to be?
Well, in New York, it's plainly Kathy Hochul.
Kathy Hochul leads you where you want to be.
Right. Who would lead me away? Lee Zeldin.
Yeah.
He's you know, Giuliani I wouldn't trust to he supports. Well, he doesn't have a chance, so that's not.
You know, he's only within 2 percentage points of Lee Zeldin.
Really?
Anything can happen.
Of Lee Zeldin, but not of the Democrats.
No.
Not of the Democrats, no.
I don't worry so much about the national level after the election. I mean, Biden's going to have the veto pen for 2 years. Now that's.
You're right. I'm stretching it, but. You know, this has been a 50-year battle. Republicans
played
and evangelicals, right, they look ahead. So if we're looking, there's no quick fix, and there's no long-term relief. This is going to be a battle for a long time. And the irony of it is that abortions are at the lowest level since the 1970s, since this all began. It's not that big an issue. We've got much bigger issues in this country to face, or in the world. Talk about climate change. We haven't talked about Ukraine in ages, and it's falling to the Russians. That's more important.
And
than
yet,
abortion.
Rosemary, if somebody says you can't have an abortion, you can't use a pill, you can't use medications, or you'll go to jail, that'll certainly change things.
It'll change things, but it will not make it impossible. This was the situation in the 1970s, and people still got abortions. Women have always gotten abortions.
Well, it's much better in the 70s. We're at half the rate, and we have medical alternatives that make a big difference. By the way,
that whole bloody hanger thing is completely irrelevant now. That's not going to happen.
I had the Wall Street Journal out the day after one of these decisions, and my 9-year-old walked over and said, "Dad, what's the hanger mean?"
Yeah.
That began an interesting discussion. But I would say at the national level, I think the Democrats have missed an opportunity, and they need to fix it. On guns, they went for an incremental approach, and we may give them all a golf clap for what they did, but at least it was something. On abortion, they went even further than Roe v. Wade, and to no shock, they got nothing out of it. They need to take an incrementalist approach and get what they can at the national level to at least inscribe some protections. I think cynically, they're hoping that if they get nothing in the meantime, their voters will get all riled up. But I've got two pieces of bad news for them. One is the economic conditions in this country.
Right.
And the second is that historically, the right has prioritized the abortion issue as a voting issue far more than the left. So Mr. Biden and his Democrats are once again at least half a step short and need to do something.
Collins showed the way. She came up with
That's
it.
Exactly
vote
right.
Vote for that.
That's
put that
exactly
in.
Right. Yeah, put that in. Put protections in that say, look, just in case there's any confusion, you know, if I want to leave a state and come back in, you don't get to ask me why, as long as what I've done outside of your state is legal in the other state. And by the way, if I've got, you know, a medical prescription and I get it filled from somebody in another state, you've got no reason to open that envelope either.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Mark Whitman, Mike Spain, Rosemary Armeo. Last 15 minutes before we take a break and we end the panel segment of the program. We would love to hear from you in the meantime. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We have many letters on the topic we just discussed in regards to the states and bringing the fight of abortion to state legislatures. Jonathan says you can just put the baby up for adoption as a way of saying, oh, well, people who want an abortion don't care about kids anyway, are uncaring people, so it won't be a big deal for them to give up their kids. It shows the cruelty, lack of humanity, and lack of empathy of these anti-abortionists. Claire says the anti-abortion advocates had 50 years to put programs in place that would support pregnant women. If they had, they would have decreased abortions themselves because women would have had real alternatives. They did nothing in that time, so we are to believe them now. I am so angry. Okay.
What were you going to say?
No, I'm just, I don't know that I completely understand the letter. Did you get it?
Not entirely.
Well, there is talk now, like Christy Noem in South Dakota saying, now we have to step forward and we have to support women and we have to support their health and their baby's health and we have to promote adoptions. You know, if any of that had any validity to it, it would have happened over 50 years. I think that's what the writers
said. We don't even have a child credit anymore.
But that's true. They don't even have, they got rid of the child tax credit. That was one of the most amazing steps forward.
It seems to me the point of the letter is that those who are pro-life have not come up with alternatives. They don't want alternatives, right? I mean, they don't want abortions.
Well,
they're not looking for alternatives.
The point is that, as Mark, I think you pointed out so well, women, it's an economic decision so often for women. And when they make a painful decision on what to do with a pregnancy and they choose to end it, it very, very often has to do with the economics of the ability to take care of the child and raise the child. And that hasn't changed. And no one has done anything to change that.
No,
in fact, Rosemary, you're right. They got rid of the child tax credit, which was a big step forward to help.
But yeah, by the way,
but they don't care, right? I mean, isn't that the thing?
Evidently.
That the Republicans are putting out. You hear it everywhere. Oh, we're going to now step up and support this by helping women and children.
It's rhetoric.
Propaganda.
Yeah, propaganda.
Well, I'd say a couple of things. First of all, just to clarify, I think what you're referring to were the payments that were given to families with children during
the one that ended in January.
Right, that ended they were available during the pandemic and
correct.
Then ended. They weren't a tax credit, and that's a small but actually important point because they weren't means tested. So it wasn't as if you had to make a certain amount of money in order to qualify.
If you made a certain amount, you wouldn't qualify. If you made over $150,000 a household.
Right, but for instance, Romney has come up with a version of that, but you can't start getting the payments until you make at least $10,000. So the issue with that is if you're a child in a family where for some reason the parents don't make $10,000, you're just out of luck in his world. That payment during the pandemic halved child poverty in this country. It was the single most successful step we have taken as a nation. And in response to that, Joe Manchin said he didn't like it, so we cut it, which is really unfortunate. Now, the one thing I would be reticent to do is, look, I know plenty of people who have a very consistent approach to their pro-life stance, and they some of the people I know personally spend a tremendous amount of their time and treasure assisting families in need. So I would never say all of the people, but I think the important thing to say is there ain't much that has effectively been done, and particularly in states that are going to prohibit it. I think it's incumbent upon those who may be on the other side of the argument who are never going to get those or are not likely to get those prohibitions reversed. At least they ought to work to embarrass the heck out of those who have stood in the way of more effective social programs for families in need.
Go back to the letters. Amy says, can the Hyde Amendment be repealed or reversed by Biden?
Congress would have to do that.
Congress
right?
would have to do it.
And then the Hyde Amendment basically banned the federal money being used for abortions.
Yeah, one of the proposals by pro-abortion people is to open up clinics on federal property, like outside the entrances to national parks.
Oh, great.
Wow.
I know.
Susan says, thank you for making the point about the likelihood of closures of reproductive health care clinics in the wake of the overturning of Roe. It will not only silence a strong voice advocating for women, it will also almost inevitably result in an overall decline in the availability and quality of reproductive health care at all levels and for women throughout the United States of
America.
That's
the whole problem with defunding Planned Parenthood. Abortion is only part of
that. That's just a part of it. You're right. Yeah. You know, education, health care,
college
students, contraception.
Women in poor communities, you go to Planned Parenthood.
Let's see.
Send them money.
Barbara says there are 400,000 children waiting to be adopted. That says it all. Barbara.
Yeah.
Okay. Will anybody else have anything else on that subject? All right. We'll go to our final story for this morning. And that is Mike Pence.
Poor Mike Pence.
Mike Pence is leaning in on abortion as Trump and other 2024 candidates are more cautious. The Supreme Court's overturning of Roe v. Wade has opened up new fissures, offering early clues about the contours of the primary. In the wake of the Supreme Court's decision overturning Roe v. Wade, former Vice President Mike Pence says abortion should be banned nationwide and is planning behind the scenes to focus on the issue in the coming weeks, according to advisors. Former President Donald Trump, in contrast, fears the ruling could hurt the GOP's election chances, his advisors said, even as he hailed the ruling as a victory for life at a Saturday rally. And some ambitious Republican governors have called for tightening restrictions in their states, while other leading figures in the party have avoided such ideas, as strategists say it remains unclear how abortion will reshape the key races in future elections. The court's ruling has opened up these battle lines among potential 2024 Republican presidential candidates, offering early clues about the contours of the primary. The differing reactions underscore the dilemma confronting Republicans in the aftermath of a far-reaching court decision that animates their base but could alienate other parts of the electorate. So for this, Mike Pence has gone in the other direction, writing on Twitter last week that, quote, we must not rest and must not relent until the sanctity of life is restored to the center of American law in every state in the land. Advisor to Pence say his firm position on abortion could help a conservative state such as South Carolina. And one said his team has been surprised that more candidates have not taken his pro-life stance. Alan?
Pence is looking for the magic bullet, the magic button that will bring him all of those conservative voters and even over some of the Trumpians and some of the other people who are coming up. I don't think he finds it. I think by this time he's been fairly disqualified by many of the people he was looking for. But you never know.
Mike Spain.
Yeah, I think that clearly he is trying to embrace the religious, the evangelicals, the stern anti-abortion people. What he does is he risks turning off moderate people. I think there's an awful lot of people who are quietly, supportive of abortion rights but aren't personally you know, enthusiastic about it. You remember the line during the Obama administration, you want abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. You know, that I think a lot of people fall into that category, and they don't want to go to a rally and hold up a sign or anything like that. They do support abortion rights, but if they, you know, and they're both in Democrat and Republican fields, you know, and they could be turned off by Pence, and it could backfire on the Republicans. Note that Mitch McConnell and other big Republicans are, you know, praising the decision, but not making a big deal out of it, because as Mark pointed out earlier, you know, you go buy gas and it's five something a gallon and you forget about that. The biggest issue for you is your own economic future, which is really worrisome right now. And abortion and the rights of women, if you're not a woman or you're not a woman of childbearing years, you don't care that much about it.
I will give this to Mike Pence. For him, abortion is a lifelong and genuine concern. He has always been against it. I don't see anything strictly political in his embrace of this, what he sees as a new opportunity. However,
of course it's political.
He's way too late because for people...
Rosemary.
Wait, let me finish and then you can attack me. DeSantis, that's not the case, but he's already saying, well, we're going to ban it in Florida. He's doing it. It's purely political. With Pence, it's a deeply felt belief that abortion is bad.
Well, I'm glad you have the opportunity to get inside his mind and find out what's a deeply held opinion and not. I think.
Yeah, we're intimate.
Wasn't he at the shooting range with you?
but I do think it's important to recognize whether Mike Pence is or is not doing this for political reasons or personal beliefs. There are people who fervently believe that abortion is a sin.
Right.
But we can't just outlaw things that a lot of people think are sins. You wouldn't be drinking. You wouldn't have sex outside marriage. You wouldn't have birth control. You wouldn't have same-sex marriage. I mean, there's a million things. You couldn't gamble.
But
I mean,
abortion is one of those issues, Mike.
Right.
That does bring people to the polls. They do vote for one issue. The evangelical vote is all
about
abortion.
Right, but on the other end, it doesn't seem to generate a single issue. It's more nuanced and part of a broader perspective. And that's how the minority can outdo the majority in many cases, including this one.
I think the article intermingles two issues, right? One is Pence. I believe Pence is sincere on abortion. I also believe he was sincere when he rode for 3 years and 11 months as shotgun to Trump, right? And as a result of
love slave.
As a result of that, you know, no thanks on Mike Pence, and I think even most of the Republicans are going to come up with that answer. I do think in this whole abortion debate, it's important to note that the U.S., you know, there are various surveys done, but the rough approximation of where people stand is that first trimester abortions they're very comfortable with, and the comfort drops dramatically after that, and sort of in a linear fashion after that. And it'd be interesting, you know, unfortunately, though, that's not how it works out in 50 states. So we're going to get 50 states that look very, very different.
Yeah.
And other than the death penalty, I can't think of anything of such consequence that varies from state to state. And I, you know, but anyway, so.
Gun control.
Yeah. But anyway, I just think the article, you know, Pence trying to find a lane based on sincerity. He lost that when he signed up for the Trump ticket, you know, more at the beginning.
He lost his credibility, didn't he?
Well, and he lost any thought that, you know, I'm a sincere politician. I only do what I believe. Thanks, but no thanks, Mike. We've seen what you do.
But he also lost it. He also lost it because Trump turned on him. I mean, you know, and he made that happen.
Well, he lost it long before Trump turned on him. But when you sleep with. Is it when you sleep with dogs, you can't be surprised about the fleas, whatever the expression is, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he got what was going to come. He should have been smart enough to see it.
Because it happened to everyone else in the administration.
Yeah, including the guy's own kids. I mean,
yeah. Yeah, that's a very good point. All right, well, in there on this Tuesday morning, thank you very much for being with us. Alan, thank you very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Mark Whitman. Mike Spain, thank you. I'm sorry you had parking problems.
Oh, well, that's no problem.
Yeah.
It's over.
I'm telling you.
We dealt with it.
One of these days, we'll get you your own spot. You, of anybody, deserve your own spot. Rosemary, thank you very much. We'll be back in just a moment with the Congressional Corner right after this.